So I had the opportunity while I was involved in all this kayak activism to help a guy on a vigil in Everett. There was a second drill Arctic drill rig called the Noble Discoverer, which was docked in Everett. And it was kind of a backup rig, I guess, in case something happened to the Polar Pioneer, or maybe in case they wanted to drill two different holes, two different places. So he needed help with this vigil, and I drove down at like 2 in the morning, and it was just him and I, and we got in these kayaks in the middle of the night and paddled around the Seaward Point. And basically the idea was to just watch it and see when it leaves, and when it's ready to leave, we would call all of the other boats together and we would try to stop it. So this essay begins the next day when we went out in the morning. Now I'll read the beginning part here. The national anthem breaks out of loudspeakers over the Everett Naval Station as we paddle around at Seaward Point, which is demarcated with black iron chains draped over the water, held down with 55-gallon oil barrels. Every so often we pass a sign in bold red letters saying, in effect, if you enter unauthorized, the people in here are authorized to shoot you. We three kayaktivists, with our yellow shell no flags fluttering from the bamboo shoots we slid down the backs of our life vests, are clearly not authorized. Two massive tugs are stationed seaward, and at first we think they might be here for our drill rig, but they are here for something behind the chains, a U.S. Navy destroyer which lets out an ear-splitting blast just to let us know we are not appreciated crossing the proceedings of a naval vessel getting ready to be towed to sea. A Coast Guard vessel rides close to starboard, as if to make sure we don't try anything tricky. As we paddle through this canyon of towering steel vessels, I want to call out to the Coast Guard vessel, "We're here for our drill rig," but I'm pretty sure they know that. So yeah, we paddled around the point and spent the afternoon just staring at this rig, and it was surreal, partly because the drill rig was next to a military base, and that wasn't lost on me at all. And it was also surreal. Hey, Carlo. Okay, I'm glad you're here, Carlo, because I'm about to get to you and the drill rig. Carlo led this vigil that I'm reading about right now. So anyways, yeah, we were sitting staring at this rig trying to discern a time of departure. Carlo had a two-way radio so he could hear what was going on with the deckhands. But what made it so surreal is that was 2015 when we had that terribly hot or terribly dry warm winter, and we were really beginning to feel the climate. And the water was so, it was June, you know, and around here we think of January, we think of these cold Junes. It was blazing hot on the water. We were roasting, and the water was warm. It was strange. It was like, this is not the water I'm used to knowing around these parts. So I knew I had to be there. You know, it was absolutely necessary. And it was really interesting. I mean, it's kind of experience you don't forget. Let me read a little part here. Hunting an oil rig is an unusual business. There are the all-day, all-night vigils with the scanners crackling, picking up the random chatter of deckhands and dock workers, trying to decipher a time of departure, hanging out in waterfront taverns, talking to longshoremen and security crews, listening for clues. There are the roving encampments near public docks and in waterfront parks, sitting on lawn chairs in the dark talking, visits by cops and homeless wanderers, pizza deliveries from anonymous donors, catching sleep here and there in the backs of cars, on the couches of friends, and a room booked at a nearby travel lodge, like a brief flop house for sleep-deprived kayaktivists. Since we are at a waterfront, there's also a rail line to look across. All day and all night, coal cars and oil trains rumble back and forth before us, empty and full, oily and carbon stained, stinging our nostrils with tar vapors. And framed between each pair of passing cars, the derrick rises out of the harbor into a perfect carbon triad. Too strange and too awful, but there it is, a caught image defining an age as it destroys it, flashing again and again through the night. That was so strange, because that was a season when climate change, I think, for us around here went visceral. We could feel it. And here were these coal trains back and forth all night, in between each one, the oil derrick. So we've got a lot of work to do, clearly. But we had some luck. One of our group, Sarna Josi, a beautiful Indian woman with giant lovely eyes, was in a tavern, and a guy took a fancy to her, one of the security guards who were securing the vessel. They drove the boats that kind of kept us at bay. And I guess he was trying to brag. He's just spilling the beans and mentioned that that it was his last night, that the vessel was leaving in the morning. So we got our information. And we are all tuned into this particular code on our cell phones, which could then be set at once to everyone. So I'll read a little bit about this. 9:24 p.m. June 29th from 23559. Mosquito Fleet. We call ourselves the Mosquito Fleet. It's an organization. Ignoble Discover, and that's what we call the Noble Discover. Ignoble Discover. Ignoble Discover to attempt departure in 6 hours around 3:30, 4 a.m. Meet at Mocotillo Boat Launch at 3:30 a.m. right next to Mocotillo Ferry Dock. This is the message that scattered activists around the region suddenly found staring up from their phone screens. A few hours later, another. 3:43 a.m., Tuesday, June 30th, from 23559. Mosquito Fleet, tugboats in the area. First crane of rig lowered. Police patrol boat arrived. Ignoble Discover getting ready. Head to Mocotillo Launch Point next to Ferry Dock now. We arrived at night. Everybody's sleepy-headed. You know, we're getting our kayaks down, trying to get organized. Then another code, 4:31 a.m., Tuesday, June 30th, from 23559, Mosquito Fleet, rig on its way. Now we're all but running, rushing our boats to the launch, scribbling our names and contact numbers on a sheet for verifying that everyone who goes out comes back, climbing hastily into our boats, pushing off and pulling hard on our paddles. The channel is wide, so we have to paddle a good way out to get into the vessel's path. But once out in the middle, we can see around the point and down to the harbor where the rig is headed our way, pulled along by its tugs at a good clip. In the gray dawn light, it harbors an ominous aspect, seeming to lurch more than float, growing progressively larger as it approaches. Arrayed before it steams a small armada of private security boats, Coast Guard vessels, and Everett police boats. There's even a full-fledged Coast Guard cutter, like a small white Navy destroyer, equipped with an unused machine gun placement on its forward deck. Head into the path of the rig, I hear someone call out. We all paddle farther out and come around, our two improbable navies now minutes away from colliding. And they kept coming, and we approached, and you know, usually our kayaks are close together, you know, like in Seattle, you've probably seen the pictures, we're all gathered like driftwood, or we're hunched up together to do banner lifts. But this was a mile wide inlet, and there were only 17 boats of us, so we're all just spread out, kind of everyone on their own. The tugs slow and a metallic voice floats over the water as a private security vessel begins broadcasting a pre-recorded warning to stay out of the 500-yard safety zone. It goes on to say we are threatening the security of their operations. It's a lengthy warning. The line that gets me is, furthermore, your approach reflects poor seamanship. As if we've stumbled into their path by accident. Usually, our kayaks are closer together, but here we're spread out over a mile-wide inlet, each of us on our own to put forth our best poor seamanship. The objective is to delay, harass, and get in the way of without getting arrested, unless, of course, you've decided to run that risk. I'm paddling my way out of the 500-yard safety zone, ever police in pursuit, when I look over my shoulder back towards the rig. Carlo Voli, who has been the main anchor running this operation, is halfway within this 500-yard safety zone and directly facing the rig and its tug, bow to bow. The Coast Guard is issuing final warnings, to which he vaguely nods, his focus entirely on the rig bearing down, his paddle held before him athwart his kayak. And to me, it was like the guy who stood in front of the tanks at Tiananmen Square. It was a human being putting their life on the line in front of this machine. And it's just like an image burned into my mind. And just as the Chinese guy was kind of pulled away by a fellow, the Coast Guard just came in and scooped up Carlo and ferried him back to shore. We were fined $2,500. And that didn't stop Carlo at all. He's been doing actions ever since. The most recent was he climbed the crane where they're trying to build an LNG plant in Tacoma to raise awareness. And yeah, it got national attention, and he's helping the indigenous people there oppose the rig. So I'm going to close here, but just a little, the last few paragraphs, and I'll read all the way to the end, because it really, I think it's the final word for me on all this. As boats paddle back, a gathering crowd on shore cheers them in. Como News is doing interviews, and Everett cops are keeping a nervous eye on everything. Eventually, we gather in a circle and ask the cameras to leave. It's a big circle, a sign we did it. We masked a flotilla at 3:30 in the morning, no less. And not in liberal Seattle, but conservative Everett, a Navy town to the north. Ignoble Discoverer was not allowed to slip away unopposed or without more witness. And we sent the message that all Shell's vessels, no matter where they dock, will be opposed, harassed, shamed, and delayed. Implicit in the message was also this: next time there will be more of us. Everyone is given a chance to put some words into the circle, to say whatever they need to say, and there is a lot of grief. An oil rig heading into a melting Arctic in the middle of record wildfires is something dark to behold. It says to hell with decency, to hell with that old idea of restraint. It says that money now is the god and capitalism the liturgy. To people caught in floods, heat waves, and hurricanes, to the life forms succumbing to extinction, it says, too bad. Yet overlaying this grief, I keep hearing gratitude. Gratitude for having found each other, for the feeling gained in shared defiance. We are learning it's better to fight alongside each other than to stand back and watch alone. We are realizing the best relief for grief is action, diving in, breaking out of isolation and joining with other like-hearted souls. Some say it is too late to stop the cataclysm. That's not really the point. The equation has changed. Consequences, outcomes, hope, and hopelessness don't really trouble us anymore. It's finally simple. This now is how we live. Thanks, everyone.